In 2005, at the World Summit, all the heads of state and government agreed to protect populations by preventing the worst atrocity crimes, genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and ethnic cleansing.
Is it working?
I think it's working. No miracles so far. But step by step, we're finding larger political engagement and support from member states. We're actually applying the doctrine in specific situations. I think it made a difference in Kenya, in Kyrgyzstan, in Guinea, Libya, Cote d'Ivoire, and being applied in a number of other places as well.
Aren't mechanisms to protect people already in place? Why do we need a special group of people looking into this?
Well, it's not a large group of people. We just have a very small office, just a few of us. But we try to act as a catalyst. Indeed, there are many parts of the UN system, many regional bodies, many non-governmental organizations, civil society, that are already working in related human rights, rule of law kinds of issues. But this offers a strategy that has been lacking before. For example, there's been convention against genocide for 60-some years, but it's never really had any enforcement mechanism. And I think we are trying to find a way of pulling this together. And also, the Responsibility to Protect offers a large political sense that publics around the world are caring about these issues in ways they haven't in the past. So for member states, for example, on the Security Council, they think twice before they would veto a measure in one of these areas. We often talk about being on the right side of history. So it's really a large political public movement in many ways, which is captured in this particular strategy.
But it's a principle. It's not necessarily a political instrument. You can't actually do anything, can you?
Well, it is a principle, and the principle is very important. And we take the commitment that the heads of state and government made in 2005 very seriously. They all said they would protect populations. We're showing them different ways to do this and working very closely with the regional organizations and others. Yes, first and foremost, it's a community effort. It's a local effort, people protecting themselves, people holding their governments accountable. It's neighboring states, it's regional organizations. And the UN can help in all of this, but certainly the UN could do very little of it on its own. But we are seeing some results, so I think these things are possible.
You obviously meet a lot of ambassadors in your line of work, and ambassadors from countries that don't have very good records on this issue. What do you say to them?
We remind them that part of sovereignty, part of being independent, is to protect your populations. That's why states were formed to begin with. And they may be uncomfortable with this, but over time, states have agreed to more and more international conventions and standards, which do have some limitations on sovereignty. They can't just do anything they want to. There are expectations both from their own people and from the neighbors and from the larger international community. So we find there's only three or four states that really object to this in any real way, and some others that maybe give it lip service, and you have to encourage them to practice this, not simply to preach this. But if you look at the overall trends internationally, there are fewer mass atrocity crimes and certainly less resistance to international action to try to prevent these kinds of things.